KPFA and 89.3 KPFB in Berkeley, 88.1 KFCF in Fresno, 97.5 K248BR in Santa Cruz, and online at kpfa.org. The time is 2 p.m. Stay tuned next for the Visionary Activist Show.
The Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. Today, we listen to part two of my Stella Coyote Memorial Solstice with Amakayla Gaston. May humans rejoin the choreography of creation in the garden of conscious kinship. For the complete talk, go to coyotenetworknews.com, and here we go, in media res.
Consider, which means with the stars, if we would all like to be influential. Irresistibly influential. You know, hey, come this way, here we go. So, which is, see, the difference from finger wagging, which we'll get to because we get to throw things into the cauldron, you know, which is a blocking thing. And remember, Ursula Le Guin says, we strengthen whatever we resist. Because resistance is always against. And I think resistance is a good beginner word, but we want to keep moving, right? Because there's no prison for the unexpected. You want to keep moving, you want to keep moving, you want to keep moving. So resistance, yeah, like anger is good as a start, but then you want to cook it into desire. So you're angry about this, what do you want? What do you want? You know, is that dynamic. So Lauren Isley says, one does not meet oneself until one catches the reflection from an eye other than human. Right? We need all these beings. You know, the gaze of a whale moves everyone to incredible, like, oh my God. You know, the gaze of a coyote, the gaze of this is food. And just a little bit of coyote etiquette that I've learned from Stella. Squealing is not recommended if you meet a pack of coyotes. Eek, eek, because they're like, we will help your race by eliminating you. eek, eek. And little wimpy things, you know, so often at you know, Bioneers Conference, bless their hearts, you know, I love them very much, in case they're listening. But often there's something wonderful, and people go, woo, woo, and Stella goes, I eat those people. Yeah, it's like, urgh. The eye, the gazing, this is all food and nutrient. You know, planets, this new moon in Cancer is all about what nourishes us and how do we nourish others. And our word culture, if we look it up in a good dictionary, the first three, four, five definitions are all what do we grow, what do we plant, and then even in a petri dish. And then way down by analogy is culture. What do we metaphorically encourage and grow in our metaphoric gardens as well as our literal ones? The squealing, no. Lauren Isley says, if there's magic on this planet, it's contained in water. We go, ooh. So here we are near water. Again, solstice is where Legba hands the baton to Yemaya, Oshu, you know, and Big Mama, water, the waters of the sea. Associate also with Neptune, dreams and vision. We go, well, what species would pollute the collective water supply? For as long as we've had imagination, human imagination has been tied to the ocean. And so it says, well, a species that had forgotten its mythology of conscious kinship. So only the healing of imagination can allow us to heal the ocean, and only the healing of the ocean can allow us to heal our imaginations. We go, ah. This is Lauren Isley. Every time we walk along a beach, some ancient urge disturbs us so that we find ourselves shedding shoes and garments or scavenging among seaweed and whitened timbers like the homesick refugees of a long war. And just a late ancestor, Jim Lewis, great astrological ally, wrote a book on Ulysses and America. And when Ulysses is sailing for home, and the Odyssey is a manual for how you take veterans home, it takes 12 years. You know, it takes 12 years to return from war on every kind of level. But Ulysses keeps getting thrown off course, and he's like, Lord. Finally, Tiresias, the blind prophet in the underworld, explains it to him and says, you have offended Neptune, the god of the sea. You blinded his son, the Cyclops. So here's what you have to do. You have to take an oar, a symbol of the sea, and walk it inland to where nobody's ever seen the sea before. And this is Greece, right? So you have to walk a long way. And there, build a temple to the god who's been oppressing you, which is an interesting clue, right? So he does. He takes an oar, a symbol of the sea, walks it inland, and somebody says, is that a piece of a windmill? He goes, this is the spot. And he builds a temple to the god who's been oppressing him, Neptune, and it works. Again, Neptune dreams, vision, water. Water reflects a reverse image. You know, your adversary can become your protector. And by building a temple to the god who's been oppressing him, it works. And Neptune sends him sweet winds, and he sails for home. So that's just something, again, to ponder as a mystery, going, what would it mean in my own life to build a temple to the god who's been oppressing me? You know, and to turn the adversary into an ally. What would that mean? And in the imaginative realms, you know, the backstage realms are such a useful and fruitful place to play. It's as though, you know, we all have our magic skills, and sometimes we notice growing up that people don't, so we tie one hand behind our back and then forget and go, God, life is really hard with one arm. And then we go, wait a minute, I have another arm. It's my magic arm, full of many potencies, the wheel and deal, you know, negotiate backstage, which is a powerful place. We call backstage the green room. It comes from Greek theater because it was sacred to Dionysus, the green man. So every actor, regardless of their role on stage, would, before they went on, dedicate themselves to the flora and fauna of this earth. And that's why we call it the green room, even though it's usually beige these days. But it's that theme in all of us of tracking everything back to its originating, liberating impulse of meaning before it got hoodwinked and bamboozled and snookered. What did this want to be? This person, this event, this thing, this green room. What did it want to be? How do we track it back? That's why language, Elegba's realm, is also part of our magic skills. You know, I'm always doing etymology, and I love meeting other word mavens. And recently somebody said, the etymology of the word charisma. And I go, ooh, oh, what? She goes, well, it comes from charis, from which we get Eucharist and charity and cur, heart, and in Shakespeare, Cordelia, dedicated heart. So true charisma is a charitable heart. We go, it's not the swagger, right? We love that. The journey is difficult, says Lauren Isley, immense. We will travel as far as we can, but we cannot in one lifetime see all that we would like to see or learn all that we hunger to know. You know, again, just the honor of breathing, of being alive, and curiosity. You know, and Jupiter would encourage us all as well in this quality of generosity. And Jupiter says, what is the one way of relating to the world and everything in it that is guaranteed replenishing and never depleting? And Jupiter says, blessing. You know, may it go well for you. And it can be fierce blessing. We're allowed to set in motion anything of which we would be the happy recipients. So we check on that. You know, and we go, you know, may it be that all humans have an increasing empathic experience of the effect of their actions on others. We go, every styrofoam cup, every plastic thing, are we willing to do that? You know, and we might want to lead us in Ashe.
Yeah, let's do that.
Ashe. Right. So
come
just,
on.
Yeah. So if you're up for that, you just follow Ami by saying Ashe. Yeah.
That's right. Ashe.
Ashe.
That's it.
Ashe, which is a powerful word. It means may the word be manifest so, you know, and this is a powerful time, so why fool around? Yeah.
Ashe.
Exactly. Hey, exactly. And feel free, you know, if it should turn out, says Lauren, that we have mishandled our own lives as several civilizations before us have done, it seems a pity that we should involve the violet and the tree frog in our departure. Right.
Ashe.
Though men in the mass forget the origins of their needs, they still bring wolfhounds into city apartments where dog and man sit brooding in wistful discomfort. Right? The magic that gleams an instant between Argos, the dog, and Odysseus is both the recognition of diversity and the need for affection across the illusions of form. It is nature's cry to homeless, far-wandering, insatiable man. Do not forget your brethren, nor the green wood from which you sprang. To do so is to invite disaster.
Ashe for real, right there. Yeah.
And when men become greater than nature, nature which gave us birth will respond, right? So we know that, you know, in nature, when conflicting forces come together, nature creates a spiral to resolve it. You know, why meteorological friends of mine, when I say, what do hurricanes want? He says, they want what we all want. They want peace. They're taking, you know, conflicting forces and trying to move them to the North Pole. So the increasing storms that we have, and we're heading into more, are speaking to us, as everything is, you know, that of the enormous imbalance of what we've set forth. But also just, you know, we believe nothing. We entertain possibilities. Late great ancestor Marcelino Santero remembers when he was in Cuba with his Santero grandmother. She was making tea for him and cookies, and out the window he saw a tornado forming. And she just, you know, was making tea and cookies, and she just took scissors and went snip, snip, and he saw the tornado dissipate. Right? We go, no, it takes more than a weekend workshop to do that. But just keep it in mind. Experiment, experiment, experiment.
Nice. I got to remember that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's right. We are, and then Lauren, actually, the last beautiful thing. We are rag dolls made out of many ages and skins. Changelings who have slept in wood nests or hissed in the uncouth guise of waddling amphibians. We have played such roles for infinitely longer than we have been men. Our identity is a dream. We are process, not reality. For reality is an illusion of the daylight, the light of our particular day. Thank you. Thank you, beautiful Lauren Isley. So Voodoo and transactional spirituality, I mean, I love this. It's not... I mean, we love everything, you know, and everybody according to their affinity. Animism is not really about Buddhist transcendence. When can we leave this veil of tears and, you know, step off, or even if it's Hinayana Honky, personal salvation. It's more incarnational sensuality, you know, and it is this wheel and deal. Like, again, Stella was really good at this. Wheel and deal. She would steal two leather gloves and then sometimes drop one in front of us going, what are you offering for the other one, right? So, and we go, how about some pate? She goes, only one? And you go, all right, two, or three, okay. And she'd bring the other glove back, you know. And also, you know, since we have a relentless war on life going on, you know, what are positive qualities of relentless? Stella was relentless. Give me that. Just, and the only creature I ever saw defeat her, meaning she didn't kill it, was a praying mantis. Kung Fu praying mantis thing. She came up to it and it did its Kung Fu thing. And see, coyotes also come around from the back, right? And they nip your little ankles. And that's why dogs know that coyotes are not dogs. Right? This is not in the dog handbook, this creeping around and biting ankles. But Stella couldn't get behind it. Again, think of this, our spiraling Aikido. She couldn't get behind it. You know, for like a half hour, she tried to kill this thing, and it was doing its thing. And then she actually bowed and trotted off, right? And it's like, she was like, you'll be cool.
Snip,
so,
snip.
So keep that dynamic as well. Yeah, so this wheel and deal, again, backstage, you know, may all of our relations with every dog, with every human, with every plant be one of reciprocal blessing. May it go well for you. We give up this, we get that. And with Stella, because she lived 19, and people would often say, how long do coyotes live? And I go, how long did your grandparents live? That's a kind of rude question, which is a little unfair of me, but you know, we've never had a coyote so loved and also so offered free range. She loved coconut water as well as, you know, and in the last days, she was particularly fond of chia seed pudding. She was like, give me another chia seed pudding, you know. And so when she got her diagnosis in November, the vet said she's going to die, you know, in a day or two, right? Because she had a tumor that had fractured her shoulder. And he said, it's not operable and the pain will be terrible. And, you know, just tell us when to give her a shot. But, you know, this is Stella. It's like we don't have to accept anything, right? I love friend Pat Spears, great Native American leader, was dying on the Lakota Reservation. And the doctors gave him like 2 months to live. And his great friend Bob Goff said, Pat, as long as I've known you, you've never been on time for anything. Why start now? And he was like, yeah. And he got, so with Stella, I go, well, part of our deal is I've never, you know, been imposing constraining certainty on liberating mystery. What do you want? Autonomy is a sacrament as much as is possible. You know, and so she didn't like the painkiller drugs at all. She was like, this wipes me out and separates me from my spirit. So I go, well, what do I have here in this drawer? Some really heavy-duty medical cannabis. She's like, yeah, let's go for that. So, yeah, and it took a while to get the dosage right because I go, oh, how are you doing? I'm, you know, are you dying or stoned? She's like, I'm really stoned. Sorry about that. So we just, you know, I was just, you know, cooking organic buffalo with sweet potatoes and broccoli, and she's like, yeah, and you know, and medical cannabis and turmeric, and you know, and I really loved ministering. It was a sweet part of our lives, and she got really, you know, she got 6 months of really good play out of it, and a lot of things happened, which reminds us what happens when we have a safe old age. And what I got to say to her was, our deal is paying off. You know, at the beginning, we both gave up a lot. She would have wanted to run 60 miles, but I had to keep her safe from the authorities. And she loved to escape and to stay just out of reach, going, you know, come here, you little... So, but the safe old age, you know, is a great evolutionary assist, because all kinds of qualities of intelligence began to unfold in her that were unique. You know, and again, what happens with a safe old age? She got more psychic. Some of her senses diminished, other ones really opened up. She invented restorative yoga. It was very very adorable. She would leap under the bed for really right up until the last days, and she'd put a little pillow under her leg and a little pillow under her head and one under there, and I go, that is so cute. And she go, she liked to and then laugh. She liked to creep up behind people sitting in a group and just snip any strap that she could find, their sandals, remove straps from their purses, and then back away and just watch the fun when people were like, what has happened that amused her a lot? You know, coyote humor. So again, you know, it was all wheel and deal, you know, and again, for all of us to go, you know, it's like when I spent summer a million years ago, well, the summer that Nixon was impeached. Yeah, I was at Findhorn. Remember, as Mark Twain says, history doesn't repeat itself, but it rhymes. And I do love from that era, great bumper sticker that said, "Impeach the cocksucker." And so we go, Archibald Catch. So I was at Findhorn when Nixon was impeached, and living with the gardeners and the beekeepers. And so I go, well, what do the bees get out of this? And they go, well, nature is very harsh, especially in the north of Scotland. And sometimes in nature, you know, bees don't make enough to survive. So we cut a deal with them. You know, we take their excess, but we guarantee that they will have safety and always have enough to get through. And the bees were cool with that, you know. And they walked in without nets or, I mean, anything. And so it's all like, what do I get from this? And how do I get from this? This transactional spirituality. So I think it's time for Witch Doctor. Just to kind of honor the voodoon, spicy, you know, creative, disobedient, a surprising magic that is within us all.
And, you know, this was actually a song. I don't know if I told you this part. That my family, we did our first trip to Trinidad and Tobago, and there was this singer named Sparrow, which is perfect for today. And he would sing this song, and the first time I heard it, I was like, that's what I am. I'm a witch doctor. I had no idea. So this is the song. They call me the witch doctor from a land afar, specialize in Obia. My real name is Papagua. As the drums begin to play and me ring me bell, everybody clear the way, me casting me spell. And hear me singing now, Roger, come here, Roger, Roger, unumbadanda. Something in the pot, a little bit of mud, an eagle's claw, donkey's blood and a rabbit's paw, one black hen, piece of golden thread, a piece of hair from a dead man's head. And who do me wrong, him get the biggest sore foot in town. And him is singing out, Roger, come here, Roger, Roger, umbadanda. Time to put something in the pot.
Yeah, so not time to put some tea in the pot. Is that the last line?
Put some tea in the pot.
I think, dangerous times call for experimentation. You know, and the word nice comes from Nessian, which means ignorant. Right? So just, words, we can still use it, but we want to know what we're saying, so it's not about being, it's about being kind, but not necessarily nice, right? So here's a little spiciness. And again, there's no prison for the unexpected. So this idea of trickster medicine is the keeper of democracy and the creator of accord. I say this a lot, but here it is again, because it's so useful. I go to the underworld, I went to the Republican convention, I went to the Democratic convention, underworlds of a kind, many useful things. But see, if we use our harumphitude composter, which we all have, it's under your chair, you can take it away with you, it's invisible, and it folds up to nothing, but you can pull it out at any time, because communication and story are only useful after we've composted our harumphitude. Because otherwise, it's like when Scorpios or Scorpio Rising say, I was very nice to that person and they flipped out. We go, no, there's more going on. I was very nice to that person inside. I was going, oh, dingbat. And everybody gets everything, right? So if you're nice, like, hi, how are you? we're all complicitously directing the movie. And as a, I wonder why I would have directed the movie that way. So this idea of, composting harumphitude, very important. And it's a way of not getting snookered into polarity, which is one of our crucial skills, to be storytellers, to be influential, to be agents of liberating. At CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference, where I went to meet all the Dementors, are there allies available? And remember, whatever we speak to in another is the part of them we're inviting to dance with the corresponding part of ourselves, right? So the reason we want to discern but not judge, which is imprisoning, is that when we judge, we're inviting the least evolved part of somebody to dance with the least evolved part of us. Never pretty, right? So these are all aspirational, experimental guidelines to play with and to practice and to kind of take away. So I saw these Ayn Rand right-wing economists, some from Austria, and I was like, and it's like harumphitude composter. And they really were. They were following their Austrian leader, who really had, he had like a black eye patch, and he really looked central casting. Everything is like central casting now. But I composted harumphitude, and they came up to me, and I really look like I look all the time, pretty much. And they were like, you, who are you? And I said, I'm Coyote Network News. I'm a mythological news service for the trickster redeemer within us all. Yes. And they said, that is so cool. Right? So now we're in Woof Woof Wanna Play. If I'd said I'm an environmentalist, feminist, the astrologer, no. Right, but see, the unexpected, let us all, we're in the feeling Cancerian beginning of summer realm, the feeling is all crucial, and we want to move our emotional default setting to woof woof want to play. And if somebody doesn't want to play, we keep going, we keep spiraling, right? And if we take offense that somebody doesn't want to play, it wasn't really an offering. Is our manner of relating an offering serves liberation, or an imposition serves tyranny, no matter what label we stick on our butts? And so again, to react to anything is not free, or to cultivate an ever-expanding repertoire of responses, is to be allied with nature's evolutionary ingenuity. And that's why, again, in all tense situations, we want to be, may everyone here be a liberating trickster. My colleague, Vermin Supreme, who runs for office every now and then as a satirical candidate, was good, and then not so good, but, because you have to really be authentic to pull it off. But in Cleveland, he was great, because he said, protesters or protectors, really, but cops on bicycles coming to pen them in. And he goes, you got to disrupt fear, because fear always plays into tyranny. So as the cops started to corral the protectors, Vermin grabs the microphone and says to the cops, remember to do it like we rehearsed it, lads, which sowed some confusion in everyone, right? So again, it disrupts all it takes is one disruption of the story and it liberates everybody. And then you begin to go, you cops on the left, your bicycles are not in order. And they began to be, now they were third graders in school. They were like, oh. And then when it got tense at another time, he had the crowd chant, "Give the cops a raise. Give the cops."
Spectacular.
It's really, well, keep all these things and make up your own, you know, and see, it's the backstage dedication. So when things are hot right there, you have things already there, you know, and we're also spiraling them into the memesphere. So unexpected is available, you know, to liberate everybody. So, and then when the Westboro Baptist Church was there going, "You're all sodomites and sinners and drug addicts." And Furman said, "Those are my voters." And, you know, and it cracked the cops up as well, you know, again, laughter, disruption, disrupting the narrative. You know, again, it's very trickster, it's very coyote to do that. You know, and that's why also in Cleveland, you know, meeting people that one would normally, like, "Oh, Trump voters," and going, "Oh." So talking to, you know, Alabama delegate, you know, going, "Want to play a game?" "Yes, I love games." Okay. So I go, "Well, I have a list of quotes, and some are from ISIS, which is really Daesh, and some are from Trump, and you tell me which is which." "Okay." Right? You can't tell the difference. Because "I will give to you the greatest change you've always wanted." "Oh, that's Daesh." "No, that's Trump." "Oh, got me." Yeah, he laughed, right? He laughed. You know, "And we must destroy the world and root out corruption within the..." "No, that's Daesh." Okay, every time he laughed, going, "Huh." Because it's essential to understand that Trump is ISIS. I don't like using that term, ISIS, but he is Daesh. Destroy things. It's the same dynamic, you know, and tyranny needs terrorism. I mean, it's a completely complicitous dynamic. You know, the Mossad, you know, created Hamas. I mean, it's all complicitous in some way. So we want to disrupt that. And there is the deep magic available tonight. You know, again, these are things to practice all summer. We have a mythological cauldron here, there we go, into which we want to throw things. So, you know, it says, "The world's on fire, let's be the bomb," B-A-L-M, B-A-L-M. You know, beauty and destruction are neck and neck. We're betting on beauty. And so this night is also a great time of, you know, internal dedication to take it through the summer. You know, internal dedication strengthens our signal. So we're more likely to have these opportunities and to be danced into place where we can do the most good, have the most fun, connect with allies with a shared vision. So things that we might want to throw into the cauldron, you know, it's like, you know, I had this great trip to Egypt and I posted some wonderful photos taken by my great guide in Luxor, Marianne. You know, and one is of me in front of Queen Hatshepsut's, you know, there. And yes, I am holding a plastic bottle of water because that's all the water there is in Egypt, which is terrible. And it's all owned by Coca-Cola, and we don't approve. But somebody made a comment going, "Do you know how bad that is? Do you know how bad plastic is in the world? Do you know?" And I prevent by saying, "Do you know how harmful your sleeping attitude is?" But I did say, you know, your wizardry would be far more effective than your finger wagging. Right? And as you, as an efficient, you know, storyteller and guide in this important realm in which we all want to do the impossible thing, remember, trickster can do impossible things, which is to transform from plastic economy. So we might want to throw, you know, are we willing to throw finger wagging into the cauldron?
Yeah.
Throw finger wagging into the cauldron. You know, and ladle out wizardry. Wizardry, right? And again, guiding. Hey, over here, you know. And see, again, did you know, if asked in a tonally inviting, offering kind of way, is very liberating. Because nobody really minds being asked, "Did you know?" You know, and so the more informed we are, the more effective storytellers as well. Yes, things that Stella would bite. Well, all complaining, actually. Stella liked to bite all complaining. If people were like, "Oh, you know, oh, my life is so hard," she would bite those people. You know, and even me, you know, in for the longest time, I feared her death, and I would go, "And oh, and what will I do with her beautiful little body? You know, will I bury it or cremate it?" She'd bite me. Just, and I go, right. She snapped me out of it. Going, I liked living with an animal that would bite me. I really enjoyed that. You know, it's not for everyone and maybe not all the time, but it was like, right, good. You know, no sentimentality, grief, but no sentimentality. And also just that quality of, you know, here, not anticipatory dread. So maybe we throw anticipatory dread into the cauldron. Right, because what she was reminding me of is, you know, now, what will I do with your body? And when it came to deal with her body, you know. It's like when we fear, like, oh, what will it be like to have this happen or to be this age? And when you get there, you go, it's cool. You know? It's okay. We know when it arrives, but the anticipatory dread. So how about would we be willing to throw all complaining into the cauldron? You know, and then ladle out inviting in the desirable. Ah, there we go. Because complaining turns one into prey. You know, games that Stella and I would play, you know, if I'd go, I would sometimes pretend to complain, like, oh, whaley, 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 oh, whaley, whaley, whaley. And she's like, I'll kill you, okay. Because now you sound like prey. Similarly, like, woo, woo, or eek, eek. That sounds like prey, you know. And the predator-prey dynamic is a great engine of evolution on this planet. It is, you know, everybody gets smarter, prey, you know, predators always consistently smarter. But even Darwin knew that the predator-prey dynamic is one of the great engines of evolution on this planet, but it does leave out altruism. And altruism is this Neptunian realm that we're all in this dream together, you know, and that we want to throw everything into the cauldron, you know, between us and dedication to collective well-being. And to throw what we think of as politics into the cauldron and ladle out what did it want to be, dedication to collective well-being, kind of ladled out. So I also liked a friend of mine said he was really angry at his body for failing him. And I go, well, which came first, you know? And he was playful, willing to go that way. But I go, well, let's change the anger into desire. What do you desire for your body? What do you want? So how about we throw anger into the cauldron and ladle out desire. Desire. What do we want? What do we want? You know, it's like the last time I was here, I was sharing something I quite like, which was, you know, being at so many groups where people are talking about their trauma. My trauma. Remember, we worship what we say, right? And we strengthen it. Sometimes I would go, what is your trauma? And they're like, I don't know, I can't remember, but I know I have one, and it's bigger than anybody else's, you know, suffering competition, you know, yeah, which is why, again, better a trickster than a martyr is always a good way to go. But so I've been, was working with a number of people going trauma, and go, well, how about next time you're tempted to use the word trauma, you replace it with the phrase, my dangerous, beautiful assignment, you know? That everything that we've been through that is hard, that's part one. The next part is to brew medicine from that that's good for everyone who may undergo that as well. It's our dangerous, beautiful assignment. We all want a mission. We all want a story. Everything, every animal, every plant, we all want a story. When I go out the door, I go, I'm leaving dogs, but I'm counting on you to keep the temple going. They're like, okay. Everybody wants a story, and, you know, you're doing such a good job of being a dog, I always say to dogs when I meet, they're like, you're doing such a good job. So we love that. So we're turning, you know, fear and complaint into magnetizing invitation fueled by animated desire. Okay.
Ooh, so nice.
So let's do that. Let's do that one more time.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's throw fear and complaint into the cauldron, you know, and ladle out, you know, magnetizing invitation fueled by animated desire. You know, what is it we want? What is it we want?
So,
you know,
much more fun.
So much more fun.
So much more fun.
Yeah, and again, you know, this solstice, stand still. You know, let's throw into the cauldron all the times in the past where we might have been teased off of center. You know, and we ladle out the Aikido, again, that says, do not stare at your enemy's eyes. You know, he will mesmerize you, or his weapon, he will terrify you. Create your own magnetic field, and then you can stand anywhere you like. You know, and for us to create a field of the desirable. So that's really good. So I like, let's, for the fun of it, maybe, you know, prediction into the cauldron, prediction, because it comes from the word predicament, almost always a negative thing, prediction into the cauldron, and ladle out prophecy. Which is, you know, informed. We got to know how horrible it is, for sure. It's not like everything's great. We got to know how terrible it is. You know, it's the five-act structure of storytelling. Act one is here we are. Act two is off we go. Act three is oops. Act four is evil. And act five is the wedding, the kiss, the redemption. You got to earn the whole thing. You got to go to act four, evil, you know, to go to the wedding and the redemption. So you can't skip that part. But you don't want to... just stay in Act 4 either. Because so many of our progressive team are like, you know, if you knew how terrible things are, you wouldn't, you know, believe in the goodness of, you know, everybody. And it's like, no, we do. We do know how bad things are. And there's a flag on that play, because condescension means we all go down together. But we're just conjuring the desirable as well. So, you know, because Neptune, dreams and vision, is stationing now, right? So nothing is certain. Right, and a wonderful word for not certain is mystery, you know. And in small and large circumstances, everything is mysterious now. And so it says, well, wonder is a sacrament, you know. Because when we wonder, you know, we turn our body into a beseeching chalice of magnetizing inquiry, right? We wonder what the hell is, and it attracts the lightning of intuition, you know, of revelation. You know, cooperating with mystery is advantageous now, and wonder is a sacrament. Dynamic amusement in the center of the storm is fun that way. I did, you know, again, we're all teasing from even the most deeply personal of circumstances, kind of larger working principles. So even when Stella was dying, and I have one slightly introverted cat whose siblings have died, but she misses not having anybody to hiss with, to hiss at. And so I thought, well, maybe, you know, I'm just back from Egypt and Abyssinian cat. So I went through an adoption process to adopt this half, you know, Abyssinian cat. And I interviewed him. It goes right. And I filled out 2 weeks of paperwork. And I go, do I get a Korean baby with this as well? I mean, it was really extensive. And then the woman came with the cat, you know, and I got a name for it, Amun. Amun means mystery. And I told all the animals, you know, Amun Ra is coming. That's really good. So the woman came with the cat. And she'd never seen anything quite like my house, apparently. It was not in her ken. It was sort of like the Rocky Horror Show to her. Like, ooh, and she goes, no, you have a dog door, you know, Katie. And I go, I can keep it closed, you know. And she was like, I don't believe you. And then as she kind of ricocheted around, like, you know, voodoo posters and, entheogenic plant sacraments and a poster, and the Egyptian Book of the Dead and, you know, Christianity and magic mushrooms. And she was like, whoa. And she's like, no, you can't have this cat. Now, because I really wanted that cat, right, I was off balance. I was in polarity going, and it reminded me of every mean headmistress, bad part of my mother going, would you like this? No, I don't think so. And I was like, oh, no, I really want this cat. No, don't take the cat away. And as a flourish, she stepped outside my house, and, you know, it's full of creative stuff, you know, and she, with a sweep of her hand that encompassed the house and me, she said, I don't like any of this. And I was like, whoa.
Wow.
Ooh, that was really intense. And so I was like, ooh, what a strange thing. Well, no, it was part of the mystery play. It was like, whoa. And then, you know, Facebook was outraged on my behalf, going, and we'll adopt the cat and sneak it to you. And I go, no, she's a psychic bad witch. We're not going to do anything. And then, you know, polarity makes us forget our magic. And I'm like, okay, maybe not the right timing, maybe not the right cat. Whatever's truly ours will end its way. Right. And so I did, you know, come back into dynamic bemusement. Going, right, let go of control, right? Because we let go of control, you know, so power can come on in. And I had been in conversation with many Abyssinian cat people, and they're like, no, we don't have anything. But I got an email right after I let go of control from a really great guy who said, you know, we said there wouldn't be any Abyssinian kitties until December, but one just became available. And I go, oh. kismet. Perhaps it's kismet, which means something fated that's good that wants to happen. I go, and that might be a good name for a cat. And I go, but I did attain dynamic bemusement. And so, you know, in the spirit of Stella Coyote, who knows no shame and is always in favor of wheeling and dealing in marketing, you know, I did bring a picture of this particular cat, and I told the breeder, and I know, yes, we should all rescue cats, and I will rescue cats, but this is a cat. It's kismet that I'm buying. And I said, I will go on the road, and I will, and Stella Coyote seems to have sent the cat, because it's the closest cat to a coyote possible. And I said that I would shamelessly put this bowl out, and you can afterwards come up and help the this is kismet that came out of the turmoil into the right thing. She's on her way here, and this is a magnetizing bowl. This message was approved of by Stella Coyote. She's like, promote yourself for God's sake. You know, what is this shame you humans have? So that's there for later if you want to donate. Stella Coyote would be very amused by that. But I love in the Arabian Nights, they often begin by saying, Kanyama Khan, which means it was and it was not. So right now it says the protoplasm of reality is especially receptive to imaginative imprint. What do we desire? What do we desire? So it's this powerful time, you know, unraveling delusion. And again, may it be the powerful blessing. May it be that anything up to no good be revealed, rendered harmless, and become an occasion for mirth in the fullness of time. And may it be in the mystery of death, you know, that when we see so much destruction around us, when the Bamiyan Buddhas were destroyed, when the beautiful city of Palmyra was destroyed, a city dedicated to expansive tolerance, when the beautiful city of Baghdad was destroyed, when the beautiful mosque in Mosul last week was destroyed, and we say, well, may it be then that the beautiful prayer, you know, embodied in that dedicated form, be liberated to waft around the world by the destruction of its form.
Yes, Ashen. You know,
May all death liberate the beauty of what was contained in that vessel to waft into the memosphere to be of infinite good where we need it now. I love, it's been resonant, you know, we're all in this dream together, and I love the resonance. One of my great allies, Rebecca, who does my scheduling, she was also, you know, when Stella Coyote died, it was very close to the death of her father, and she went to her acupuncturist, who said, we're going to treat the ghost points. And we're like, oh, we haven't heard about this in acupuncture, tell your acupuncturist. And then, so there's ghost points, right? And she said, Rebecca said that when the ghost points were treated, she saw a green dragon arising, and it made her stand up taller. And I'm like, ooh, you know, ghost points and green dragons emerging, that's fun. It's like, the pagans say that wherever we have scars in our body is where power comes in. We go, good reframe, good frame. It's our dangerous, beautiful assignment. So the green dragon ghost points are expanding our palette with which we paint reality, going, ooh. And we want to do that now as we honor animals, our kin. You know, Mars is in the underworld saying, you know, it's as though the backstage creatures on this planet, you know, are convening and saying, humans, we're going to have to either kill them or heal them. Let's try healing them first. Let's make everything that has ever moved humans to conscious kinship available. You know, every piece of music, every poetry, every fairy tale, every piece of knowledge available for fresh expression by everyone here. You know, whatever you have an affinity with. You know, that our lives are spiritual detective novels, and everything with which we have an affinity is a clue to be honored and wondered about. So the animals that we'll play with, and Ami's going to lead us in a great song, but another wonderful ancestor, Margot Adler, who was a witch and a radio person, a radio witch, you know, and the wonderful pagan chant, which I won't attempt to, you know, but it's just fur and feathers, scale and skin, different without but the same within, many a body but one of soul, from all creatures of the gods made whole. You know, and it's my beautiful friend Deborah Felmuth, who lived in Syria until very recently. Aha! That's very nice. The wolves are announcing, it is the new moon! It's the new moon right now. Ah, we're here. And it it's perfectly on time, because now at this new moon, we go, well, what do we want to birth now together? You know, and take it with us and add texture and images and smells and scents and imagination throughout this whole summer. You know, and this, in magical workings, there's this called an egregore. An egregore is a thought form that one co-creates with nature. You know, and adds molecules to it. In World War II, the Brits financed not only Bletchley Park for codebreakers, but they also financed the witches and wizards. And Dion Fortune, a great ancestor ally, familiarized people with the term egregore, which is to take something like the Statue of Liberty and bring it alive, or something like now that we want to do and want to continue each one of us, you know, through this summer. And you can join me on my Monday night calls, shameless self-promotion, if you want to do it with a group, with a wolf pack, if you want to do it with a wolf pack, because we'll be doing this, but everyone in your own autonomy, to create a container, an invitational egregore comprised of everything that we love about plants and animals and rocks and minerals, to be a living, powerful being, ally. You know, because against all odds are the odds that Trickster likes. So there's some parts waiting backstage going, we love against all odds, now is perfect. You know, invite us in, you know. And all kinds of things happen, you know, again, cooperating with the super intelligences of nature. You know, when Chevron was installing its drilling rig in the Arctic, friends of mine were there, and they saw just way on the horizon this giant iceberg, you know, just came on the horizon and went dum 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 right for the drilling rig, right? And Chevron was like, this shouldn't happen, but we're skedaddling. And the towboat broke down, and the towboat towing the towboat broke down, and off they go. But cooperating, I loved at Findhorn that same summer, met Donald First, who was head of the World Federalist, who talked about there were spirits in the Dag Hammarskjöld meditation room at the UN. He spoke, he looked like a, you know, a three-piece suited kind of grown-up person, but he talked about the intelligent deity of the North Atlantic. You know, everything that we have a word for has a kind of living intelligence, and it's playful. You know, it's, again, Terry Pratchett, wonderful animist, and Eddie Izzard also, you know, Jeff, the god of bad haircuts, you know, I mean, just, I mean, everything, the goddesses of stuck drawers, the, you know, and it's a whimsical way of relating to the world, you know. Terry Pratchett was such a great animist in his writings, you know, a moan escaped her lips, happy to be free. I mean, everything's alive, you know, and if everything's alive and is related to as a personality, it's all negotiable. So with the animal song, Ami's going to guide us to think of all the animals and the qualities of medicine that we might want to invite in and that we might want to embody. So honey badger is kind of kin to coyote. Honey badger is the most fearless creature on earth, with just reading about it. Great escape artist. We want to be great escape artists. And escaping gives us glee. A neighbor told me that once Stella was really good at lining branches up against the fence and then doing a downhill run and vaulting over the fence, and it was like, wow. But a neighbor said that once he saw her vault the fence and go in his yard and sit on a tree trunk and go, nobody's chasing, and she jumped back into the yard, you know. So escape artist. So honey badger has become immune to snake venom. It's mongooses, hedgehogs, pigs, and honey badgers are immune to snake venom. Snake venom kills 96,000 people a year. I had no idea. But the way that snake venom kills is that it's got a molecule that fits right into the receptor of mammals that paralyzes breathing. And so what honey badgers have done, and those other animals as well, they've narrowed their receptors. Right? And because snakes are good eating for honey badgers. They're like, we love to eat poison. We love to eat snakes. So may we also be, you know, narrow our receptors to poison so we can eat it and feast on it. So we get to honor a honey badger and many, many other beings. All right, animal song here.
So this is the perfect copycat song. Of course, it's a copy and a cat. So I'm going to say something, you're going to repeat after me. Okay, ready? Here we go. I am a fishy and I love my mother.
I am a fishy.
Yeah, perfect. I am a fishy and I love my father.
I am a fishy and I love my father.
Perfect. Beauty above me.
Beauty above me.
Beauty below me.
Beauty below me.
Beauty all around me.
Beauty all around me.
Ooh.
then?
I am a honey badger and I love my parents.
I am a honey badger and I love my parents.
Beauty above me.
Beauty below me.
Something right there, I can tell.
Okay.
Yeah,
animal.
You.
An animal.
I love the coyote.
Woo! Oh. I am a coyote and I love my mother.
I am a coyote and I love
my mother. I am a coyote and I love my father.
I am a coyote.
Yeah. Beauty above.
Just for the fun of it, one more thing also to just by the power of this group and this evening, how about we are willing to throw all past, present, and future resentment into the cauldron?
No!
And we love our mother and father. There we go.
Especially if they're frogs,
right, exactly. Yeah, don't take your parents seriously, or personally, they were just research projects. So all resentment, that's really exciting, you know, and So when I went to the conventions, I had bumper stickers made, Coyote Network News, Flora Fauna 2016, you know, and everybody kind of liked that, but now I'm just with ink going, all right, 2018, all right, there we go, this time for sure. So, you know, what is born this night, it's an experiment we're setting going for everybody to take with them. What do we want to cultivate? What's being born, this experiment? And we say, well, Bodhisattva Coyote, you know, born this night, this season, this summer, you know, and citizen trickster. Again, all the trickster ingenuity dedicated to personal and collective well-being, you know, may that be born. So what is gestating? What is being born? How do we experiment with our, you know, fabulous powers of conjuring and visualization and adding texture? So the word illusion comes from in ludo, in the game. Delusion, de ludo, out of the game. So illusion, what's the most useful illusion? And then we run through it and then we create another one. Delusion takes you out of the game. So in our finale, you know, where we wish everything well on its journey, and we wish the Stella Coyote part of the world well done, between worlds ambassador. And I love Blake, who says, again, a great ancestor, Captain Cod, taught me this when I'd had a number of deaths and I met this homeless man who listened to my show and who quoted Blake. And he said, do you know this, Blake? He who does to himself, he who to himself does bind a joy, does winged life destroy. But he who kisses the moment as it flies shall live in eternity's sunrise. So, I'll fly away.
Some bright morning, when this life is over, I'll fly away, yeah, to that.
Concern himself, since we've been away from the African continent for 400 years, 300 or 400 years. Why should we concern ourselves? What impact does what happened to them have upon us? Number one.
For news, information, and analysis about Africa and the African diaspora, tune in weekly on Mondays at 7 p.m. to Africa Today with your host, Walter Turner. Africa Today is your source for being up to date on Africa and Africans. Mondays at 7 p.m. Africa Today on your Pacifica radio station, KPFA 94.1 FM.
A Attention KPFA listeners. Our summer fun drive starts Tuesday, July 25th and goes until Friday, August 4th. During this time, we need your help to come down to our phone room and volunteer your time answering calls and taking pledges. No experience is necessary. The phone room opens Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 6:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 6:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. and on weekends, 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Snacks, coffee, and tea will be provided. Please visit kpfa.org for more information about volunteering. See you there.